Have you ever thought about what happens to your hair once it's been cut and broomed up by your barber or hairdresser? Where does it go? Is the garbage bin really the responsible place for it? I have been on a sustainability journey for a few years now, and I have to admit, I have never considered how hair salons and spas recycle their hair, hair dyes, aluminum foil, and even other products responsibly. Perhaps this is new to you too? Hello and welcome to the Sustainable Life podcast. My name is Em, and I'm the host of this podcast and the founder of the Sustainable Life app, a mobile app for sustainable living made easy. The Sustainable Life app, free on both Apple and Android, connects you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. And the purpose of this podcast is to interview various experts around the world about topics relating to sustainability. Our podcast's objective is to help keep you informed, encouraged, and inspired. In today's podcast, we will be talking with Green Circle Salons. We'll be learning about their phenomenal organization and educate ourselves so that we can support salons who recycle and compost their products responsibly. Will and I even go on a fun tangent about how complicated the word compostable is when written on products that we consumers encounter in grocery stores like coffee pods. So without further ado, let's get started. Today on the show, we have Will Simpson with Green Circle Salon. So welcome, Will.
Hi, Em. Thanks. Good to be here.
So can you start off by telling us what is Green Circle Salons and what is your role at Green Circle Salons?
So Green Circle Salons is a movement of sustainable salons, spas, and barbershops located all throughout North America. We work with these groups to help them to leverage their sustainable messaging with their guests, to be in touch with the best products and services to help them to become more environmentally sustainable, and ultimately to recycle and repurpose all of the beauty waste that's being generated in their services.
What is your personal story? How did you get involved in salons and such? Did you own a salon in the past?
In fact, I've never owned a salon or worked in a salon. I like to pretend like I'm a beauty professional and give people hair consultations, but it's entirely biased and without any factual grounding. So I heard about Green Circle Salons in 2010, in the summer of 2010, in the midst of the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill that was happening in the Gulf of Mexico. And the way that I heard about it was that there was this group of salons in Toronto that were donating hair to soak up the oil that was being spilled. And I thought that this was absolutely phenomenal. So sure enough, I met with the founder of Green Circle Salons, Shane Price, and he told me that lo and behold, there was this movement within the beauty industry to send these hair booms, which is essentially a nylon stocking filled with hair, down to the site of the BP oil spill, and that it was being used to soak up oil and to keep the oil from coming up onto the shoreline, as well as to actually contain the spills on the water.
That is so cool. What?
It blew my mind. And you know, it's actually fantastic because every time I share that this is something hair can do, I get the same reaction that reminds me of, you know, how passionate I was the very first time I heard about it, because everybody has the same reaction, which is, I had no idea that hair could be so powerful. And so I heard that story and I thought, you know what, this is something that I could probably do for the rest of my life, because it's, you know, there's so much need for something like this, for a creative way of re-envisioning the waste stream and turning it into a solution for some very real challenges that we face every day.
That is fascinating. I don't even know what to say to that, because my mind is blown. That is so cool.
It's pretty incredible. And you know, what I've learned since then, since that very first day, is that hairstylists touch so many people, not just physically, but the way they share stories. You know, historically, a salon was a place where conversations happened and ideas were shared in, you know, Europe in the days of old. And I think that hair salons still very much have that same function in society. And so ideas can be spread very easily. And we've really sort of repurposed that opportunity in order to be able to have a meaningful conversation about sustainability that can transcend not just the beauty service, but that can actually follow salon professionals and their guests back home into their everyday lives.
Oh, that's such a neat thing to think about, is people sitting in barbershops and hair salons talking about sustainability. That just gets me so excited.
And you know what? It excites me. And what we've learned, you know, we've created different programs now for single owner operator hairstylists. So people who are operating from home or from a mobile salon or a salon suite, all the way up to the chain groups. And what we've learned is that at every level, these conversations really do have the opportunity to impact what we're doing as citizens when we leave the chair and when we go home.
Oh, wow. That's so neat. And even as citizens sitting in that chair, we have the opportunity to kind of bring that topic up with our hairstylist and probably with the people working there too. So that's a really neat way of thinking about it.
Exactly.
So can you tell us about you and your role?
So my role within the organization is working specifically with larger chain accounts, the groups that would be more kind of household names within the salon and spa community. And I work to support them, to bring them custom green solutions, and to ensure that they're supported throughout their transition to becoming fully sustainable beauty brands.
That's really fascinating. That is that like, I obviously this question wasn't planned, but like, is that a challenge? Because they're larger salons. They're probably chains. I mean, I doubt they have that infrastructure set up. I don't even know if that infrastructure is a priority for someone who thinks about the bottom line so much. So has that been a challenge for you as a salesperson?
That's a really good question. Yes and no. So yes, as you said, a lot of these groups are kind of focused on the bottom line. They're not necessarily as eager to sacrifice profit for sustainability. However, we have noticed that over the last decade or so, there's this emerging trend towards sustainability or purpose-driven business guiding how they conduct their business. And so what we found really is that while, you know, sustainability might not be on everybody's radar, and certainly some of these businesses have never recycled anything before, that doesn't mean that they're not looking at ways that they can do business a little bit more cleanly in the future. And so what we do is really, it's a period of discovery to learn about their needs, to learn about how they operate currently and how they want to operate in the future, and then creating a platform that allows them to do that and really have a conversation about that with the guest so that the guest can be a part of that transition to becoming a cleaner business inside their community.
Right. My perspective on all of that is, I mean, this might just be like my personal perspective and be completely wrong, but I don't really see businesses that are large chains making that a priority unless consumers like myself and others who share my values and possibly your values too go into the salons and say, hey, like, do you guys recycle? And when they hear that enough and they hear it from enough people, then they start to kind of look into it.
I totally agree. I think that this is something that is driven by consumer demand, which is why we always love reaching the consumer in platforms like this, because we can have that conversation with them where we say, did you know that you know, salons and spas create so much waste that can't be recycled or repurposed in traditional ways? And did you know that there was a clean, responsible alternative to the status quo? And by having that conversation, we really bring this movement forward. So I think that absolutely it's driven by consumer demand for healthier, cleaner alternatives. I also think that in large part, we're finding it to be driven by staff demand. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, in the whole millennial crisis that people are talking about in business, there seems to be this challenge to find and retain good, loyal help. And what we found is that certainly within the beauty industry, this is the case, and that people whose values are being represented in their workplace are that much more likely to want to stay there and fully contribute and help grow the business. And so, of course, these chains that are very successful and that have a long storied past, they're trying to figure out how to maintain that success into the future. And they've learned that they really need to be more than ever listening to what their staff is looking for as well. And so in large part, we're finding that a lot of the new interest for a sustainability platform inside these beauty businesses is coming from their staff.
Whoa, I never thought, obviously ownership, management, like head office, corporate office, I thought about, but the staff, it wasn't necessarily something I really thought about. So that's fascinating, but it's a lot of people that are needed, right? So the consumers need to make it be known, staff need to make it be known, management need to consider it, and then same with the corporate head office. So that's really, really fascinating. I guess there's a lot of different angles. So absolutely. For the consumers, could you please tell me, like, what are the items that need to be recycled within the salon that aren't necessarily recycled by local cities? I'd love to learn, because I did my best not to do any research before talking to you today, because I want to learn through you. So what is recyclable in salons that... Just tell us about everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you can imagine, residentially, we're able to recycle a lot of different things. Here in British Columbia, the Recycling Council of BC is doing a great job of really pushing what manufacturers are using to produce our consumer products.
For our listeners who don't know what British Columbia is, we're in Canada. So if you're in America or wherever, we're Canadian and we're in British Columbia, Canada. That's kind of like Vancouver, Canada, where the Olympics were, if anybody doesn't know.
Yes, and thank you for clarifying that. I need to remember to speak in universal terms. So here's what I'll say, universally speaking, is that the recycling industry has been going through a lot of challenges, a lot of, a process of really trying to identify what it is and how it operates. And traditionally, recycling has operated with very few streams, and it's operated internationally, meaning that there's generally been a 60-40 principle where, let's say, 60% of material is handled locally and 40% is handled internationally to be turned into post-consumer materials. This is mostly when we're talking about paper and plastic. Right. What we're finding is that with recent changes in how different countries are handling materials, what they're accepting, what they're refusing, there's been an increasing push for local solutions to local problems. So in other words, if we're creating all of these different streams locally, first of all, we need to be better at making sure that they're being sorted and separated. And then
cleaned before they're even sorted and separated.
Exactly. Yeah. Clean streams that are not contaminated or commingled in any way. And then, trying to find local processing solutions for them. So it seems like almost every day there's an article coming out about, a new county or town or city that's refusing even the basics, paper and plastic. And so residentially, this is becoming an increasing part of our reality as consumers, but this has kind of always been the case for businesses. And it's a really convoluted issue, but it has to do with lease agreements. It has to do with what's available in your strip mall. There's a lot of different things that come into play when you're a business owner versus when you're a residential taxpayer who's paying for waste management.
Right, because we have a truck that comes to pick up our recycling and everything else. They give us guidelines on what we can and can't recycle, whereas for businesses, they have to pay for it. It's an additional fee. So they have to call an external company to remove their garbage, unless it's a part of like a lease agreement for a building they happen to be in. But other than that, if they're a standalone shop, it's all up to them, correct?
That is correct. Certainly here and in a lot of different areas. It can kind of change regionally. Some cities have mandatory city recycling. For example, in New York City, there's an ordinance where the city itself actually collects paper and plastic recycling. And that's mandated that businesses participate. And so in that case, it wouldn't have to do with your lease agreement. But it really is kind of a regional specific issue. But what we know overall universally is that businesses struggle to recycle even the basics much more than residential. And then on top of that, when we look at specific businesses, like for example, salons and spas, nail salons, barbers, basically the entire beauty industry is affected by this challenge where we're dealing with very specific materials that don't fall into the normal categories of food waste, yard waste, paper, or plastic. Mm-hmm. So examples of what Green Circle supports our membership with, things like hair clippings. So the hair that's being cut inside a barbershop or salon, it can be composted, but the reality is that compost as a solution, as a system, doesn't work when your compost bin is full of hair, because hair needs other organic matter around it in order to properly break down. And hair that goes to a landfill, as you know, most salons have always just tossed it in the trash and it gets shipped off to the landfill. In the conditions of a landfill where there's no sunlight or air or positive bacteria to break that down, it actually turns anaerobic, and it essentially it becomes mummified, and it off-gasses and releases things like methane. So just as we're working regionally more and more to make composting a priority, because we don't want organic food waste in our landfills, the same challenge exists with hair. Any organic material, whether it's, you know, grass clippings or food scraps or hair clippings, that organic material, when it gets shipped off to a landfill, really poses a major issue with greenhouse gases.
I wonder if it differs for people like me who have natural hair, like I don't dye my hair. So I'm sure that's probably a bit more invitable for the compost bin. Whereas people who dye their hair a lot with chemicals, I'm sure that, I'm just assuming this, I don't know for sure, this is what I'm talking to you today, that probably shouldn't be going into the compost bin because it's so ridden with chemicals. Is that a correct assumption, or is that a false assumption?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I think municipalities are really challenged by the organics bin. At one point, I used to live in Toronto, Canada, and at one point they were accepting diapers and pet waste in the organics bin.
What? And that doesn't make sense. It's made from plastic, the diapers.
Exactly. And so there are, you know, some real challenges when you open up the scope of what can be collected. I think the city of Vancouver does a very good job because they really try to limit it. But even with things like compostable food packaging, there's a huge difference based on how long it takes to biodegrade. And different composters will want sort of different rates of decay, so that they can turn this stuff around and you know, use it for a proactive solution. And so the...
Sorry to interrupt you, but like I was watching a report just a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but apparently a lot of the compostable type dishes and like coffee pods and those kind of things, anything that says compostable on it, usually local cities and even a major city like Toronto actually can't compost those pods. Even if they say compostable, they're technically garbage from the report I saw, it was on CDC, on Marketplace. And essentially, in order to be properly composted, they need to be sent to a proper composting facility. So kind of like how Green Circle Salons can probably compost or recycle things better than a city can. That's how a lot of those compostable dishes and pods and those kind of things need to be composted. But for consumers like us, when we go to the grocery store, I learned this the first time when I was watching that report. When consumers like us go to the grocery store, we think we can throw those things in the compost bin, but technically our cities can't handle it. Did you know that?
I've certainly heard a lot that supports that idea. I think the reality is that these things can go into a compost bin, but the challenge is that they can't be broken down properly within the amount of time that is required in order for that material to be turned around and either resold or used as organic matter. So in other words, if you throw a fork into your local composting bin, that may still be a fork by the time they want it to be turned into compost. So Green Circle Salons is really the beauty industry's first and North America's really only solution for the entire gamut of materials that would be used every day by salon and spa professionals. So it's the hair clippings, which obviously there's a lot to talk about there, and we can really go down the rabbit hole. It's foils, so the aluminum foil that gets used for color application. It's also things like foam foils, balayage strips, basically all of the different implements that get used in a color service, as well as the hair color itself.
But do the salons wash the foil and then give it to you guys, or do you guys do all the washing and all the cleaning of all these products when you recycle them?
Part of how we manage the color waste is actually by taking the foils dirty. And so this is one of the interesting differences between what we do and what people try to do. Unfortunately, I've heard it called different things, but hope cycling, is when you're kind of throwing something in the blue bin and hoping for the best, hoping that it ends up getting recycled. There's quite a bit of that in the beauty industry as well, by way of people rinsing off their foils and then throwing them in the bin the way they would with, aluminum foil that they've used to make dinner. The reality is that stuff is most likely not going to be getting recycled from your business recycler. And certainly there's a better way to manage it such that all of that water isn't being used and that color isn't going down the drain. So we take the foils dirty, and in the recycling process, when that stuff gets melted down and turned back into aluminum ingots, they actually capture all of the chemical residue that comes off of the metal in that smelting process, and that gets specially treated so that it's not going back into the atmosphere. We're not rinsing it down the drain.
Oh, good. It doesn't end up back in our freshwater lakes.
Exactly. Yeah. And then similarly, the hair color, we know that the number one way that people get rid of excess hair color, whether it's overused, overmixed product that's still sitting in the bowl when they're done a hair color application, or whether it's expired product, people just dump it down the drain and they rinse out the bowl, because that's kind of what naturally you would want to do when you're cleaning out your tools. But what we do is we provide a solution where they can actually dump that product into a separate bin. We collect that, we weigh it, and we can track it and show the salon how much color waste they're generating, so that over time they can actually generate less color waste, or rather be more efficient with the color that they have purchased. So it's actually a good kind of business building tool as well as a sustainability tool. And then from there, we would take that hair color and it gets put through a series of different applications, depending on where the salon's located, where the water content can be removed and neutralized and added back into our gray water sources. And then the hair color itself would go through a waste to energy process where essentially it gets incinerated in a closed loop system and turned into energy that gets put back into our grid.
Super cool. I hope we get to a point where we don't need all this like chemical hair coloring and chemical products in general. I'm not for it personally, but I understand that society has kind of built itself to a point of needing it, and maybe not needing it, but like being used to it. And it's going to take us a while to kind of slowly gear away from that. So I'm glad that there's something to like help with this in-between time. But yeah, I really do hope that we get away from all this chemical stuff and that people stop using tinfoil during dinner. Like, not good to have metals go into your body unnecessarily, but right.
Yes, I'm agreed on both fronts. And I think it's easier for us to move away from aluminum foil as dining consumers than it may be for the industry to move away from hair color. However, having said that, there are a lot of solutions that are being innovated from, you know, ammonia-free, PPD-free product to organic hair color, and even, you know, timeless traditional dyes like henna are now being kind of more mass produced or more sort of mainstream produced by leading hair color brands. And so we're seeing that every year there's new technology coming out. And a lot of it is kind of more like powder based dyes that are being used as a direct dye.
That's good. I haven't done enough research, but I would assume that like, I really hope it's a false assumption, but I'm sure like in some cases it's true that like, at least with henna, you could be 100% natural. You'd really have to be amazing at it to be 100% natural and to be able to offer it in so many different colors. I'm sure industry right now, they still do use some sort of chemicals or even like fragrances, which are technically chemicals, to like treat even some henna materials. But if there is like 100% organic color, please let me know about it because I'd love to have them on the podcast show too. Because how cool of a conversation is that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there's no question that the industry still needs synthetics in order to perform with, you know, creating all the colors of the rainbow and all of the different performance factors that are being used in modern hairdressing. However, I think that it, like anything else, if you look at the way solar panels have evolved over the last 15 or 20 years, what we find is that as soon as more attention and more resources are put into that category, the whole world of it kind of blows open. And so year over year, I think we're finding that more advances are being made in sustainable hair care. But absolutely, we're not quite there yet in terms of being able to perform the full spectrum in a way that's both sustainable and completely healthy for the consumer.
Oh my gosh, fingers and toes crossed for innovation, right? marrying like the natural and like whatever scientific innovation. I'm so excited to see what the future holds.
Well, so, you know, it's so funny because when you look out in nature, you see all of the colors of the rainbow. And, you know, at Green Circle, we often say that the looks that we see on the runway, all of these things are really kind of a facsimile of what we see in nature. The raw materials and resources that are used to produce these looks come from nature. And in many, many ways, it's a direct emulation of what nature has produced. So if we can find a more natural way to do it, I think that that's just, you know, closing the loop, and it just makes good sense.
Yeah, it's great for our own health, for the environment, and probably all living beings, because I find when companies tend to go a bit more organic and natural and respectful, everything tends to get that respect too. So like the animals that might be involved, and then also human rights as well. So I don't know, I just feel like if we, there's like this beautiful ripple effect. So I'm just so excited for the future.
I would totally agree with what you just said, because Green Circle Salons is actually a B Corp. And so what that means is that we've made a commitment to be using business as a force for good. So not only does that have an environmental impact, but it also has a social impact, where if you actually look in the DNA of our company, we pay our people a living wage. We invest in women and children internationally. And it's that exact ripple effect that you're talking about, where it's, you're not just trying to get in and do your business and get out. It's, you're looking at every piece of the supply chain or the value chain and figuring out how to truly add value back into society, so that if somebody were to adjudicate you, which we have to actually reapply every year, and if somebody adjudicates you, they can see that you are actually creating a net positive value on society.
That's beautiful. So you spoke about most of the recycling categories, and then I kept going off on tangents. Did we miss anything? So we've got hair, we've got aluminum foil, we've got all those foam rollers and such. Color.
Yeah, hair color. I would say in the sort of order of importance that I would place, I would say hair, because that's the most universal one. That's the one that is being cut every day all over the world in every town and every city. There's hair color. There's the foils and the different implements that are used to activate that hair color. And then we also collect a wide variety of materials from the spa and aesthetics side. So things like wax strips and popsicle sticks, the gloves that are being used by a service professional, essentially all of the materials, even things like makeup containers and nail polish bottles that have never had any alternative to going into the landfill. All of those things are collected in their own category. And those again are turned into a local energy solution. So depending on where we're located, it could be gasification, it could be incineration, but it's essentially taking the energy potential from those products and converting it so that that can be used as a new fuel source, either in our homes or our businesses.
That's so cool. And I was reading, you sent me this document, and you were in the document and sort of mentioned some of the things that your recycled materials become. So do you want to mention like your favorites?
I think the most exciting one right now definitely is biocomposite. So biocomposite is, anytime you're talking about a composite material, it's sort of made up of different things. But the idea is that we are using biocomposite as an alternative to plastic. So one of the challenges that we have at Green Circle Salons, and I think that businesses the world over face when they're trying to be sustainable, is that sometimes you have to actually create less sustainable solutions in hopes of achieving your end goal. In our case, we have to give salons recycling bins, or salons have to go out and purchase recycling bins in order to be able to collect the materials that we're eventually going to recycle. So we've looked at this a lot of different ways over the years, and we definitely try to retrofit the existing salon waste bins. We collect up to 95% of the material from the salon and recover it, so it's not ending up in the landfill. So what that means is essentially they need 95% less trash bin space. But nevertheless, we have this challenge often where we need to outfit them with a new bin. And so the way that Green Circle's gotten around that is by creating bioplastic, which is made up of a percentage of post-industrial recycled plastic. So plastic that's collected off the floors of factories that make recycling bins, and then hair. And so this is essentially turned
into... cool.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. It's hard to wrap your head around, I'm sure, as a consumer especially. But yeah. Essentially, this bioplastic is a pelletized alternative to traditional plastic that can be melted down, injection molded, and turned into all kinds of different things. So picture anything that you've purchased in the last week or year that's made out of plastic, and that could be made out of a biocomposite alternative. So for us, the obvious ones are things like the color bowl, where your hair color gets mixed, as well as the actual recycling bin that these materials are ending up in. And so we're very happy to be soon launching our first, I think the world's first ever, fully sustainable biocomposite recycling bin.
That is so fun. So then when you kind of, that thing wears down, they send it back to you and you turn it into a whole new bin.
Yeah, exactly. It could be broken up. It could be repelletized and turned into a new bin. It could be turned into, the countertop of your color bar at your salon, or anything else that as consumers we would typically rely on plastic for.
Oh, your alarm is going off.
I'm so sorry for that.
No worries at all. That's hilarious. That's what makes these podcasts so fun. I love that. Honestly, like plastic, I feel like we have so much plastic in the world. We don't need any new plastic, but the plastic we have, when we kind of repurpose that and create these new innovative things, it's so brilliant. Like if somebody said to me, we could get your old hair and we can turn that into like the filling for a mattress, I'd be like, ugh. Like I don't want to breathe in my old hair. But like this makes sense for your hair. Of course you can blend it with plastic and you could do that. So that's really awesome.
There's so many opportunities out there that exist for hair in particular, as kind of a generic, natural, fibrous material. And yeah. Really, I think we're just, as a company, Green Circle is just starting to scratch the surface of what's possible. But, you know, looking backward into history, we know that the pioneers and the settlers used horse hair as an insulator. They used it as a way to fill, like you said, mattresses and pillows and furniture. So much is available to us that we consider to be a waste material. And when you just kind of flip the narrative a little bit on that and think of waste as a usable source of new materials, it really opens up a whole world of possibilities.
That's such an interesting idea, because I guess I would have no problem with like horse hair. And what's the difference, right?
Exactly. Or you know, maybe sterilized hair that's been turned into something else, you know, that's been ground down into a powder. I think when people think about hair, they think about the hair that they found in their food or the hair on somebody else's brush. It's like this kind of foreign alien substance that's, quite frightening.
Gross. Like my parents came over to my house. They visit me on Sundays. Sometimes they walk over to my house and they were in my house and they looked at my compost bin and they were like, you're disgusting. And I was like, why am I so disgusting? And they're like, how can you have compost and have like little things of hair in there? And the truth is, when I brush my hair, I take the hair out and I compost it. And for me, it's completely normal. It's completely natural, but there are still people out there that are like, that's disgusting. That does not belong in there. But it's like, why? It's natural. Right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I had the exact same fear as you probably a decade ago. And at some point I learned that it's as natural as anything else. It's as natural as carbon or oxygen. And it's become a huge part of what I do. And so hair no longer has that weird otherness to me. It just is.
So the last question, because I know your alarm went off. So how can listeners find a Green Circle Salon in their area?
That's a great question. So we do have a directory of Green Circle certified salons and spas. If you go on to greencirclesalons.com, there's a directory where you can find the businesses in your area that are Green Circle certified. And so you can search by brands if you have a preferred color brand or retail brand that you like. You can search by your postal code or your town or city, and it'll direct you to all the Green Circle salons in your area.
That's beautiful. And I'm offering like all Green Circle salons everywhere a coupon code to get onto the Shop With Em app for free too. So hopefully by the time people listen to this podcast, they'll have a few Green Circle salons in their area, even on my app. And maybe encourage more salons in your area if they don't recycle let them know about recycling. And if they really, really don't know what you're saying and, you know, really claim that it's not possible, let them know about Green Circle Salons. And I'm sure your team can kind of help get them educated on what's possible.
Absolutely. As we mentioned earlier, the key is really getting consumers to leverage the message and to share that they know that there's a better way for salons to be doing business, and that that's something that they want to see in their salon. Because the day that consumers vote with their dollars is the day where business itself really totally has a facelift.
That's a beautiful end note. Well, thank you so much for your time, Will. Until the next time.
Thank you, Am. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. The Sustainable Life app is a digital platform which includes a mobile app, website, podcast, and documentary series, all centered around the five factors for sustainable consumption: impact on human health, environmental impact, respect for human rights, respect for animal rights, and last but not least, socioeconomic advantage, because we want brands and businesses who have sustainable practices to succeed. The purpose of the free Sustainable Life app, available on both Apple and Android, is to connect you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. Use the app to do direct-to-consumer online shopping or for the fun hashtag shop local function, through which you can find local retail shops, grocery stores, cafes, restaurants, salons, spas, event venues, eco hotels, eco tours, and even eco service providers like makeup artists, naturopaths, and dog groomers. This app was created to make sustainable living easy for you. Use it at home and while you travel to live a life in line with your core values. And of course, to hashtag shop local. The app is available on both Apple and Android devices. Have a story idea or suggestions for a future guest for our podcast? Visit www.sustainablelifeapp.com to submit an idea, or email us at podcast@sustainablelifeapp.com with your guest or show idea suggestions. Just a note that we are a non-judgmental community. It is our belief that no one is perfect, but if we all do our part to consume more sustainably, there will naturally be a positive ripple effect worldwide. Our hope is that the app helps to positively impact your health, the environment, and all living beings. On a legal note, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the guest and do not necessarily reflect that of Mangla Bansal, Tell Your Story Productions, Inc., and its subsidiaries, affiliates, and associated companies, together with all respective officers, directors, and employees thereof. Thank you for being such an important part of our community. The love enlighten me salutes the love enlighten you. See you next time.